Hello, I'm Andrew Cord, and this is our study series through Fact or Fiction. We now enter into Section 2, God Exists, Fact or Fiction. And this is Topic 2.3, We Need God to Be Good, Fact or Fiction. And as always, we start with our conversation points. First one, if I had the opportunity to master a new skill by taking a pill and was permitted only one pill, I would. Agree or disagree? So hopefully that will lead, again, the whole point of these is to get some discussion so that people feel that they can openly share their various opinions. Right, second one. One day I hope to write a best-selling book. Agree or disagree? All right, someone might say, oh, actually, I have no intention of writing a book. Someone else might say, actually, I'd love to. So let's explore why. And again, what you're doing is you're encouraging people to share, to be able to share their opinions and maybe examine those opinions. All right, the third one. I want to be famous. Agree or disagree? And then we move into reflection. This is, again, where we share a story, and here it is. Even though life got somewhat easier for Mr. and Mrs. Qureshi when they moved from Pakistan to the United States of America, they still faced some challenges. They were devout Muslims belonging to the strict Ahmadi sect of Islam. Mr. Qureshi served in the US Navy and had a long and distinguished career, attaining to the rank of lieutenant, or as Americans say, lieutenant commander. In 1983, they welcomed the arrival of their son, Nabil, into the world. Nabil was his father's greatest delight and source of pride. At the age of 5, Nabil had been taught by his mother to memorize much of the Quranic in Arabic, the Quran in Arabic, even though his parents' heart language was Urdu. His mother also taught him the Islamic traditions, which they observed strictly as a family, and that Muhammad was the greatest and most perfect man. As Nabil grew older, he was trained to be a Muslim apologist. In high school, he discovered that most of the Christians he met could be quickly and easily persuaded to doubt what they had been taught about Christianity. And let that be a lesson to us all. After he finished high school, it was his parents' wish for him to study medicine and become a doctor. He was happy to comply because he wanted to make his parents proud. In 2001, Nabil enrolled in the medical school of Old Dominion University in Virginia. It was customary for students to join one of the many campus groups while studying, and Nabil joined the debate team. On one of the team's first trips, Nabil shared a hotel room with fellow team member David. When David settled into their room, he took out his Bible and began to read it. When Nabil saw that, he declared to David, "You know what you're reading has been corrupted and is not the true word of God." David, who had recently become a Christian while in prison, turned to Nabil and said, "Go on." Most Christians whom Nabil had said that to had simply accepted it. No one had ever asked Nabil to go on before, so Nabil was a little caught off guard. He then said to David, "What you're reading was originally spoken in Aramaic, then translated into Greek, which was later translated into Latin, which much later was then translated into German, which was then eventually translated into English. So what you're reading there is a translation of a translation of a translation of a translation." David said to Nabil, "I see. Tell me, on our way up to our room, I heard you talking to your mother on the phone in Urdu, and I asked you what she said, and you told me in English what she said." "Yes," said Nabil. "What you told me, was that an accurate translation of what your mother said?" "Yes, it was," admitted Nabil. And with that little exchange, Nabil's world began to crumble. With one question to help Nabil evaluate his assumptions about what he believed about Christianity and continuing to do so over the next 5 years of their time at university, David Wood helped Nabil see and understand that what he had been taught about Christianity and Islam was not true. In his book, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, Nabil describes how he became convinced that Islam was false and Christianity was true. But it took him nearly 2 years to decide to convert to Christianity, not because of the lack of good evidence, but the price he would be forced to have to pay. If he was to convert to Christianity, he would be rejected by his parents. One night in a dream, though, Jesus appeared to him and quoted Matthew chapter 10 and verse 33, which says, "But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven." This gave him the strength, this vision of Jesus in his dream, and the courage he needed to tell his parents of his newfound faith in Christ. In 2017, after a very brief battle with stomach cancer, Nabil died, aged 34. It was a very, in one sense, very sad end, but you can watch his almost daily YouTube videos through that journey, and I trust be inspired by it because he's very transparent and he's very open about the battle that he had. The role of investigating truth claims. Investigating whether something we have long believed comes at a cost. For Nabil, the cost was his family and his community. Ultimately, he paid the price of accepting the truth, which meant that he was rejected by his family and all of his Muslim friends. But he came to know new friends and discovered that despite what he had been told all his life, they were good people. Here's a discussion question just to get people thinking through some of these issues. Not everyone is persuaded by facts and evidence alone. Oftentimes, the character, that is, what a person is really like, is the determining factor as to whether they are believable or not. What kind of character traits hinder or help someone from being believable? And I hope that someone in your group says, I think if someone says they believe something and they actually live like they believe it, that helps them to be more convincing. And if someone says that, I think they're on the right track. So in other words, integrity, honesty, credibility in the sense that exactly that, they actually live what they believe. They're not hypocritical. Here's a quote out of Nabil Qureshi's book, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, A Devout Muslim Encounters Christianity. His last words hung in the air, their gravity slowly sinking in. After a few moments, I spoke. Then, what hope is there for us, David? David smiled reassuringly. Only the grace of God. But why would he give me his grace? Because he loves you. Why would he love me, a sinner? Because he's your father. David's words hit me powerfully. I had heard Christians call God Father, but it never clicked. Only when trying to figure out why God would give me mercy and grace when I deserved none, did the gears start turning. What a great, what a profound quote from Nabil Qureshi in his book. And hopefully there may be others who struggle, who are in your group, who also have wondered, why would God love me? What a great answer. Because he's your father. The relationship between what a person believes and how they treat others. The ancient Greek philosophers understood that the most desirable goal for every person was to become a, here's where you fill in the blanks, virtuous. V-I-R-T-U-O-U-S, virtuous, that is, good person. For Plato, this involved gaining wisdom. There's another fill in the blanks. He discusses what this means in his book, The Republic, in which he narrates a long and varied series of dialogues between his teacher, Socrates, and several inquirers. If you were asked, what are the qualities of a good person? How would you answer? There's an impromptu discussion question you as group leader might just throw out there. What constitutes a good person? Someone might say caring. Someone might say selfless. Someone might say humble, as we're about to look at in the next paragraph. In John Dixon's book, Humilitas, which is the Latin word for humility, I don't know why people feel the need to say things in Latin, but there it is. He notes that before Jesus Christ came, no one considered humility to be a characteristic of a good person. In fact, they considered humility to be the sign of weakness. Plato also recorded Socrates asking another philosopher, Euthyphro, whether something was good just because the gods decreed it, or did the gods decree it because it was good and just? Today, philosophers refer to this as the Euthyphro dilemma. The dilemma might also be reworded as, is something right and good because God commands it? Or does God command something because it is right and good? We might even boil that down further and ask this question. Is God good? Now, that might not be as simple a question as you think, because there are some people who would argue, no, he's not. So hopefully that will lead to a discussion, and it may even push buttons. It may push buttons in a way that someone says, my grandmother died, or my auntie died, or my brother died, or my whatever, whoever died, or this happened, or that happened, and I blame God. So you never know where that could end up, that discussion. But here's what we're going to now look at from the Bible. Question one, what did the people of long ago come to discover about God according to Psalm 105, which says, for the Lord is good, his steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Psalm 118, verse 1, oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever, and so on. So what do we learn from that about what the ancients believed, people of long ago? Well, the ancient psalmist who wrote this knew that God was good. He always does what is loving. He is always faithful. And we're going to have a look at in a moment that sometimes when life gets a bit messy, it's easy to take our eyes off God's goodness and think he's not being good at all. Question two. How did the Lord reveal to the prophet Micah what it meant to be a good person, according to Micah chapter 6 and verse 8, which says this, he has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. And there we have it. To be a good person, love kindness, show mercy, and to be humble. Question three. Some people do not understand that God is the ultimate definition of good and that he is always the ultimate source of infinite knowledge and wisdom. Sometimes it seems that God is not good or doesn't really care because we experience pain, illness, tragedy, or distress. But how does Romans chapter 8 verse 28 correct this idea? Romans 8:28 says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. So even in the midst of our confusion, when someone loves God, they can continue to have the confidence that despite their adverse circumstances, God will always bring about a good outcome for them, even in the midst of temporary distress. Such an important discipleship lesson for each of us to learn. Question 4. Even when people are not good to us, how does the gospel teach us to treat them according to Romans chapter 12 and verse 21, which says, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." And Romans chapter 13 verse 3 and down to verse 4 says this, "For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer." So what do we learn from those two scriptures? Well, we are not to retaliate with unkindness, but are to overcome evil with good. That is, while people may slander us, lie about us, seek our hurt, we are to bless, be kind, and to be gracious to them. Worship always brings the worshipper closer to the one he or she worships and results in him or her increasingly becoming more like the one he or she worships. This is why worshipping a good God will do you good, because it will transform you into that definition of goodness that we've seen from the prophets, to love mercy, to love kindness, to love others sacrificially, and to walk humbly. So here's some closing questions based on what we've looked at. Can a person be good without knowing who the source of good is? Can a person aim to be good without knowing what true goodness is? And that's the discussion questions as you finish up this study. And the answers might be, can a person be good without knowing who is the source of good? Well, they might be, because of their intuitive knowledge of who God is, as we've already seen from Romans chapter 2, that God has put it into everyone, a knowledge of himself and his goodness. And the problem is, they may be good, but they may not know why. They may not even know why it matters. Well, it matters because we're all created in the image of this good God. I've got one reference for future reading if someone wanted to have a look at this. It's Nabil's book, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, A Devout Muslim Encounters Christianity. And then I hope the discussion has proved profitable, and I hope also that you now have gathered some prayer requests and finish up the night praying for one another. And we'll be back for our next study, or our next topic at least, topic 2.4, believing in God makes you happy. Fact or fiction?